Coming up on Tech News Today, more rumors about Microsoft making their own version of Windows Phone. Also, Facebook gives away free Wi-Fi. And does anyone want the iPad Mini? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, November 2nd, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by American Express Bank, FSB, offering a high-yield savings account, the perfect complement to help you reach your savings goals. To learn more and open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/online savings, member FDIC. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. It's just an 8-bit kind of day.
I guess it is.
The Wall Street Journal now reports that its sources say Microsoft is testing a smartphone. We've heard this from other blogs before. This is coming from Asian suppliers who say they're testing the phone with Microsoft. Phone has a screen between 4 and 5 inches, but the sources are not certain whether it would be brought into mass production or not.
The iPad Mini officially went on sale today, and there were crowds. Sort of. Depends on where you were. Reuters was monitoring lines across the world this morning, including Tokyo and Seoul Apple stores with crowds of 100 people or more. But overall, it seems that the crowds are smaller than they've been in the past for other Apple launches. So does this mean the end for Apple? Probably. But let's see how the opening weekend numbers look. Analysts are predicting somewhere between 1 and 1.5 million.
No headline said, you know, mini lines or nano or mini.
Oh,
nobody did it. Why did nobody do that joke?
They actually resisted that joke.
What's Friday?
Oh,
no. I
saw it on Google Plus last night.
Oh, you saw it? Okay.
Yeah.
Apple has published an apology to Samsung and The Guardian this morning in an advertisement that could easily be missed. The text says that the High Court of Justice of England and Wales ruled Samsung does not infringe on Apple's design. There isn't an actual "we're sorry" or anything, but at least it's in 14-point font in accordance with the ruling. What a good idea.
Facebook's testing out a new service that gives you free Wi-Fi if you check in on Facebook. Right now, the service is live in a few businesses, but Facebook isn't naming names. If you're not on Facebook, you can, of course, or if you don't want to check in, you can just, you know, use an optional sign-in, from like get a passcode from the business. So Wi-Fi for signing in. That won't get fished.
Judge John Lee in Illinois federal court ruled that Kaiwan Fisher owes FlavaWorks $1.5 million for sharing 10 movies over the internet using the BitTorrent protocol. Fisher legally purchased the 10 movies, which contained an encryption code that identified the copies as his. Damages of $150,000 per movie were assessed. Fisher did not appear in court to mount a defense.
So iPhone with a PH or iPhone with an F? In Mexico, it's sort of leaning towards the latter.
Wouldn't it be iPhone?
No, Tom, it wouldn't. It would just be iPhone with an iPhone. Sure, why not? Apple has lost an injunction bid in a Mexico City court that would have allowed it to continue selling iPhone-branded hardware in Mexico after a Mexican company pointed out, hey, we registered the name iPhone with an F 4 years before you, Apple. The decision stems from legal action Apple initially filed back in 2009, requesting that the iPhone with an F company cease using the iPhone with an F brand because it's just going to confuse the potential Apple consumer.
Almost say confusion. Russia's new internet filtering bill goes into effect today. It was passed back in July under the guise of protecting children from pedophiles, of course. However, the bill also gives authorities a way to censor political speech and spy on the entire nation if it wants, with deep packet inspection.
Samsung announced it sold, not shipped, 3 million Galaxy Note 2 since the device launched in September in Korea. The Note 2 didn't reach the UK until October 1st, and only recently in North America, I know as first in line. The oversized phone and undersized tablet has no real competitor in this niche.
The smartphone operating system market continued its consolidation into a two-company race, and some could probably see this as a virtual monopoly now. IDC issued their Q3 market share numbers, estimating Android holds 75% of the market, up from 57.3% a year ago in Q3 2011. Apple's iOS increased its market share to 14.9%, up from 13.8%. The only other gainer was Windows, up to 2% from
1.2%. Yeah, Windows.
Hey, it's almost double if you...
They can only go up.
BlackBerry still holds the number three position behind Android and iOS with 4.3%, but that's down from 9.5%.
There's still a thing.
A security hole allowing anybody to see the email addresses corresponding to certain Facebook accounts has been discovered. And it gets worse. Some appear to be accessible without even entering a password. But don't worry, because a Facebook engineer now says that the company has disabled the feature that created the hole. The vulnerability started getting attention with a Hacker News submission that pointed to a Google search for a particular query, which was linked to potentially 1.35 million personal Facebook accounts and their corresponding email addresses embedded in the URL.
I looked for the query this morning. There was only one result, and it's not the result that gets you anything. So, so they've de-indexed those pages, too.
You're a bad hacker.
I was just looking... Maybe I just suck at it. You're right. Let's take a break and thank one of our sponsors for today's show, without which we couldn't put all this together. American Express Bank FSB, member FDIC. Think about the ways you save, the things you save for. Maybe you're saving for a house. Maybe you're saving for a car. Maybe you just want to become more disciplined about putting away a portion of what you earn. Whatever your goals for saving are, here's a good place to put your money. An American Express Personal Savings High Yield Savings Account gives you a competitive variable interest rate to help you reach your savings goals, and you can easily link it with your existing bank account. There's no minimums, no fees, and includes great phone support 24/7 as well as online support. It's a great complement to your existing financial tools. Just add the American Express Personal Savings High Yield Savings Account. It's FDIC insured by going to personalsavings.com/online savings. While you're there, open an account. Remember, there's no minimums, no fees, and no need to switch banks. All you need to do to get started today is go to personalsavings.com/online savings. That's the high yield savings account from American Express Bank FSB, member FDIC. So let's talk about some technology stories and kick it off with this rumor that we've keep hearing over and over, that Microsoft is testing a smartphone that they've made, similar to the Microsoft Surface tablet, which they also made. Wall Street Journal reporting that Asian suppliers are testing it. It's between 4 and 5 inches. Suppliers aren't sure if this is meant for mass production. Maybe it's just a reference design that they would provide to their manufacturer partners, possibly. A couple of interesting quotes to keep in mind here. Stephen Elop said last week in an interview that he would welcome a Microsoft phone because it would stimulate the market. He thinks it would actually get more people into Windows Phone, which means more people would buy different kinds of Windows Phone, which means Nokia would sell more Windows phones. Steve Ballmer, when asked about whether Microsoft would make their own phone similar to the tablet, tried to deflect that. He said, right now we're working very hard on the Surface. That's the focus, but this is the quote. That's our core. Look, we'll see what happens. So he... intentionally refuse to rule out and say, no, we're not going to work on a phone. Clarifications to Microsoft PR have gotten sort of soft answers of like, no, we're focused on the Surface right now. So it seems to leave the door open that Microsoft might make a phone. Should they? Is Elop right? What do you think, Ayaz? Should Microsoft do for the phone what they've done for the tablet?
I think they kind of have to right now, because if they want to show that they are behind this product, and this isn't like 7 where they kind of abandoned it, or 6.5 where they left that for dead. If they want to show that this is the product that they want other people to use, they might have to say, look, not only will we put money behind advertising, and we're not going to favor just one company, we're going to be one of your partners. We're going to be like, we have our phone, limit the sales the way they would, because they don't want to step on too many toes, I'd imagine. But it might just help because it has everything that's supposed to be in that phone already. Even though they've been working so closely with Nokia and HTC, it seems like if Microsoft's the third big one, because Samsung's kind of doing a phone, but it's not a Galaxy S3 style, like, amazing thing. If Microsoft can do that, maybe they can bolster that ecosystem a little bit faster.
I think that Microsoft could definitely adopt kind of the Nexus style, you know, putting the best foot forward and saying like, oh, this is, you know, this is the good one, or not the good one, but just like, you know, if you want the
example.
The example one. I mean, it's definitely working for Google with Android. It's been working for Apple with the iPhone. as opposed to all those other knockoff? No, never mind. I guess not.
I mean, Google is 75% of the market share, we just heard in the news views. Having other people make the phones. And Wall Street Journal said, and Google actually owns Motorola, which makes these phones. But that's a very different situation.
Well, we haven't seen a Motorola Nexus.
Yeah, exactly. They've walled Motorola off and said, you keep doing what you're doing. So it's not like Google is taking over the experience on the hardware like this would be. Microsoft is designing a phone and working with suppliers. And I think when you compare it to Apple, it's not the same thing, because Microsoft, even with the Surface, has not said, and only we can make this tablet with this operating system, that's the way Apple does it. It's kind of a halfway point between what Google does, where we put out Android and everybody can make it, and what Apple does, where we make everything ourselves.
Well, isn't it at that point a reference platform?
It is and it isn't. I mean, it's a reference platform, and but are they also going to sell it?
Yeah.
To consumers, right? Making a reference platform is essentially what they've done already with Windows Phone, saying these are the specs of the hardware, and you have to make your Windows Phone within these specs.
It's like getting a CR48 or like one of those Intel Ultrabook reference designs where it's like, whatever, it's vanilla. It runs great, you know? It's not the, like, hey, let's differentiate ourselves by making it a triangle phone. That wouldn't really work so well.
Microsoft really tightly controlled the hardware requirements for Windows Phone 7, and they're kind of loosening it up with Windows Phone 8. So it doesn't necessarily it's not the greatest idea, because if they already have the same style phone, other than the fact, like I was saying, that they would bolster, like, we're advertising, we have a phone, we can show it. I don't know what huge benefit Microsoft gets from it, apart from the ecosystem boost.
Well, it might just prove that much more that Microsoft is committed. I mean, I think when they made the Surface tablet, it was a little bit of a, hey, you know, we're going to try to do a tablet that's new and different and shows all the best of Windows. But at the same time, we're so committed to this. We know that the consumers want this tablet, that we're going to make our own. You've got all sorts of options, but we're one of the options now. You do that with Windows Phone, and we were talking about Microsoft numbers going up. They really have a long way to go, though. To have another phone in the market, I think makes sense for Microsoft.
Remember that Microsoft built Windows on the backs of IBM. IBM's path to victory was to allow other people to make compatible hardware. Microsoft doesn't have an IBM in the mobile space right now. So this may be their attempt to say, well, we're just going to play the part of IBM too. And we're going to put out popular hardware because we know what our customers want, and try to juice the market up. But not restrict the operating system. We're not going to stop people from using Windows 8. We wouldn't stop people from using Windows Phone.
That's an interesting way to think about it.
Let's move on to Facebook giving away these free Wi-Fi hotspots. Iaz, what are the details here? You said in the news feed you got to check in. What else is going on?
What was in the news feed is, like, you can check in, you can get free Wi-Fi with that way. But it was first noticed by Tom Waddington. He also found the Facebook want button promoted messages. He just seems to, like, check out Facebook code all the time. And Facebook confirmed the service with CNET and InsideFacebook.com. So what happens is Facebook provides routers to businesses, and when you check in on your device, it'll send you to that business's Facebook page, and potentially you'll have deals or specials available on that that page itself. Now, like we said before, you don't have to check in if you don't want to. You can always put in the passcode from the local business or whatever. And the idea comes out of the Facebook hackathon session. Lots of things came out of that in the past. At first blush, it sounds like a win-win, right? Facebook gets your data. We know where you are. People are checking in. That's great. And you get free Wi-Fi. Darren, this got to be a downside, right?
Well, no. I mean, I love the idea that it just kind of, like, opens the consumer's mind to that whole, like, oh, I'm at this restaurant. Let me check to see if they have that Facebook Wi-Fi. Oh, great, they do. And it's offering me these specials. Let me just go ahead and log in here and type in my email address, my Facebook password, so I can get the free Wi-Fi. Yes. And if you watch Act 5 and you know the nefarious things we do with those.
Well, what
that's
if you're,
just
what if you're using a VPN, though? What if you're using a VPN?
Well, that's the thing, is if the concept is you get free Wi-Fi after you check in, well, then that's most likely not going to happen until you've gone ahead and signed in. So it would be interesting to see if they come up with some sort of novel authentication mechanism for this that doesn't actually expose your account credentials to the service provider. Because, I don't know, I mean, it's kind of almost like a liability at that point for that restaurant. So I don't know. If I were Facebook, I'd be a little cautious about rolling out something like this. But that's just me because I'm security-minded.
Well, assuming they can get around the whole security concerns, Sarah, do you think this is something that could graduate out and become a Facebook product? Is this the kind of like extension that they would be doing when it comes to trying to get people to use Facebook features more?
Yeah, I think Facebook wants to encourage all of us to give it more data on a regular basis, and convenience is the easiest way to do that. If it's me and I got to get on Wi-Fi in a pinch, I'm probably going to do this, and I'm not going to think too much about it. And I think I'm probably speaking for a lot of people who just want to get on Wi-Fi, and it's nice to have it that's free, and if it's going through Facebook, that's great. I've got Facebook Connect buttons all over the net, and I've gotten really used to them. Now, I know that there are people who don't use Facebook, don't ever want to use Facebook, have a problem with it, and they've had security problems and all sorts of stuff, definitely some privacy issues. But I also think that Facebook is in the business of being everything everywhere. So it's just Facebook's part of the internet that you use to get across this rock, across this river. I need Wi-Fi.
Facebook wants to be the internet. You know, oh, forget about that other internet stuff. Just stay on Facebook. That's where everything is. You know,
yeah, but that's
like
not
AOL.
Really. I don't feel like that's what I do. I mean, I use Facebook for a lot of connecting with third-party services, but I'm not actually on, you know, a Facebook domain all day long.
But that's what Facebook would prefer. Facebook would prefer like, oh, maybe it's like, oh, free access to all the Facebook you can eat, you know?
Well, Facebook would prefer that, but Facebook knows that we're not actually just sitting on Facebook all day long, or not all of us anyway. I don't think any of us at this table are.
Definitely not
so
me.
Figure out how to make sure that I'm still pumping data into the Facebook system. Yeah, I'm not saying this is the best idea ever. I'm saying that people will use it.
Does it bother anyone that you have to broadcast even just to your friends where you are?
I do that.
To use
all
the Wi-Fi?
Day long. You know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right.
I'm just totally used to that.
In this context, you're checking in when you get there to get the free Wi-Fi, not like right as you're leaving to say like, oh yeah, I went here, but don't come stalk me because I'm not here anymore.
You could do that.
Yeah.
I do that in Foursquare sometimes. I check in when I'm leaving the gym because I don't want anybody to see
me there.
I wonder
if Facebook would try to do some weird stuff where it's like, aha, and now we provide, you know, like come in and like, oh, we noticed you had that crappy router. Here's this new one. It's got the Facebook and it'll bring you deals and the things. And all we do is provide the internet access for the people so they can browse the internet. And then, oh, hey, I see you're trying to load a page here. Let's add a little bar at the top, like little like buttons everywhere and stuff. I could totally see them like, you know, overstepping the bounds. And
it really does remind me of what Facebook's doing in a lot of developing countries where they're making a Facebook version available for non-smartphones. And people get it for free on the phone because the carriers who sell these phones and sell the service want people to buy the phone to use Facebook because then they can sell them all the other stuff that they provide.
Yeah.
All the other services they provide.
I think what I'm saying is I barely trust like Comcast and AT&T to be my ISP. I would definitely not trust a social network to be my ISP.
We need a mesh network. Apple rolled out a product today. Did anybody notice, Sarah?
No. The Mini is a flop. No. As I mentioned in the news views, Reuters had a pretty good article starting with the big store in Sydney, which is usually it's a one of the flagship stores. So that's kind of officially the indicator for how a new Apple product is going to roll out worldwide. There were big crowds in parts of Asia and Tokyo and Seoul, although Reuters noted a flagship Hong Kong store, which is a big, beautiful store, there appeared to be more staff than there were people waiting in line to get iPad minis, which actually kind of reminds me of the day that iPhones initially were available on Verizon. And I went into the Apple store in downtown San Francisco, and it's like there wasn't a line. There were just a lot of employees waiting for me to come in and treating me very nicely when I was there. People went, oh, there must not be a demand. Nobody really cares. And then, of course, a lot of people have Verizon iPhones now. So, you know, we could go on and on about the lines throughout Europe, and it just seems to depend on whether, you know, obviously on the East Coast, there are some lines for Apple stores, and a lot of people in New York City are saying, well, that's just bad taste. You know, with everything that we're going through right now, who's waiting in line for an Apple store and people are waiting in line for ice?
For food and
yeah,
ice
that
and fuel.
Sort of thing.
And yeah,
so there's that's a bit of a strange case, weird timing right now for this. But then the way that I see it is, and I'm not saying that this is going to be a huge hit. I think that there will be fewer iPad minis sold, certainly, than let's say the new iPad from March of this year. Because if you already have an iPad, there's that much less of a reason to have a mini. I think that a lot of people who are going to get the mini are people who have never had an iPad before or are upgrading from their first gen iPad, that sort of thing. Who really needs to? Well, I'm going to have two iPads, so I mean, I guess I need two iPads.
Most of iPad today does need two iPads.
But I don't think that that's really normal. I think that's somewhat unusual. That's a little excessive. But I also think that we were allowed to start pre-ordering at midnight a week ago. And if you do that, then you don't have to go to a store, whether there's a line or not. I save myself a trip. That makes perfect sense. That's like how I pay for movie tickets and why I don't wait in line at United Airlines. I just use the kiosk, you know, to check myself in. That just makes more sense. So I hope that that's how people are buying their electronics in general, unless they just really like the idea of stores.
Isn't this launch kind of staggered at the stores? Like, there's no LTE version of it available right now in the store.
That's true.
You're not going to have that demand. Because this, the weird thing is, this is the more portable version of the iPad. Mm-hmm. This is the one you probably do want data connections with, because you might be likely to carry that instead of a 10-inch device. So Apple wasn't even introducing both product lines at the same time. They're like, well, we're going to have the Wi-Fi one on this Friday, and mid-November you'll find your other one. Mm-hmm. So, and that probably hurt the demand a little too.
Yeah, I think that this reminds me of the iPhone for Verizon when it launched. Remember, we covered the launch. And there was like no one around.
Yeah, I just talked about that.
And I'm just saying that's the...
I walked in and was like, I think we had a live shot on me and there wasn't much to see.
Do people use Verizon iPhones now? Yes. So, yeah.
Exactly.
No, I'm with you there, 100%.
Well said.
I was busy trying to calculate the percentage of people in the world who are iPad Today hosts. And my calculator doesn't have enough trailing zeros to make the percentage.
Well, we're a small percentage, but we're a strong, mighty. We're a mighty percentage. I need every iPad, okay? I need it.
So maybe fewer people go out to get iPads. They just need to like do their part and get more mini iPads.
Right.
Yeah.
I just feel, I guess my point is, if you pre-order, then you're still counted in these numbers, but we talk about this every time Apple introduces anything, and it's like, are there enough crowds? Ooh, maybe the tide is turning for Apple. I don't think that the iPad mini is going to have the kind of numbers that, it's not a new product. It's a smaller product, but it's a product that everyone is already familiar with. So when you think of it that way, and it's also a sort of an unproven product. It's like, well, you know, it seems like it'll be better for some people. Yeah, you know, you put it in your bag more easily, and it's more portable, and it's lighter. We haven't had a couple months of people saying, wow, I really love this mini. It really is better for people to go, oh, I think I'm going to get one for Christmas.
Well, and there are complaints about it.
That too.
Before it came out. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show. This episode of Tech News Today could not be done without the fine support of the folks at Gazelle. And if you want to get a new iPad mini or not, it doesn't matter. If you want to get any kind of gadget, you need some cash. And if you want to raise cash out of your old gadgets, the simplest way is to go to gazelle.com. It's simple and fast, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones in a lot of cases. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets. You lock it in for 30 days, and once you get your new phone or your new gadget, then you can print out the free shipping label and send it along to Gazelle. They'll turn it around in a couple of days, pay you by PayPal, pay you by check. It is, I have found, I've used it myself, and I have found it the simplest way to turn your old gadgets into cash. So there's no risk. If you're just even thinking about it, go to gazelle.com, find out what they'll give you, and lock in the quote, because you have 30 days to decide if you want to sell it to Gazelle or not. And if they ask you at the end how you heard about it, by all means, please tell them Tech News Today is how you heard about gazelle.com. But go turn your old gadgets into some cash. gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. So Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer has made a significant promotion.
Yeah, so last week we heard that Yahoo had bought Stamped, which was officially Marissa Mayer's first acquisition as head honcho, as CEO of Yahoo. Well, something that also happened last week was the former IntoNow founder and CEO Adam Kahn, C-A-H-A-N, Kahn? I'm sorry, Adam.
Would you say Kahn?
Yeah. All right, we're going to say Kahn.
Kahn!
I hope it's Kahn just for that.
Yeah.
So we can do that more.
So Marissa Mayer can lean out of her office and yell, Kahn!
on.
I need to talk to you about mobile strategy.
Right. So he's the new head of Yahoo's mobile efforts. Meyer had sent out an email to employees of Yahoo, which was leaked out to All Things D, as they are. Mobile efforts that includes enabled screens. That's sort of like the Yahoo's version of saying second screen technology. Also includes Flickr. So his title is officially Senior Vice President of Emerging Products and Technology. He'll report to Meyer specifically. What's interesting about this is Khan hasn't been at Yahoo all that long. When Yahoo acquired IntuNow in spring of 2011, he came on board. So he's relatively new, although Yahoo has a bit of a revolving door in general for executives. And if you're not familiar with IntuNow, we've actually talked about it on iPad Today. It's great. This is a little bit of that Shazam-type technology where if I'm watching a television show or a movie or something like that, I can fire up IntuNow. It scans the audio and compares it against satellite feeds and IDs what I'm listening to. Based on, you know, it's for live television and that sort of stuff. And there are certainly competing products out there, but IntuNow works really well. And it's the idea that you're kind of checking into some sort of event that you're watching, and it's that second screen thing. And he has quite a bit of experience in mobile, which is a great thing because, of course, Meyer has said publicly, Yahoo needs to be a mobile company. Got a long way to go, but that's the direction that we're moving in. He previously worked for MTV Networks, NBC, National Geographic TV. He also worked for Google in biz operations.
Okay.
Now, it seems like pretty much everybody that Meyer is taking under her wing and acquiring or promoting has that Google connection. She is really tight with her former Google folks.
And that makes sense, doesn't it?
Makes sense.
I mean, if you've ever left a job, you're still tight with a lot of the people you work there and you'd want to work with them again.
Well, especially, and she probably says firsthand, this guy's good.
Yeah.
I know he's good. I know he's going to be a good head for mobile, and this makes sense. What makes me very excited is just the word Flickr. The fact that someone said, this specific person is now going to take care of this specific product that's so sad and lagging and particularly in mobile. I mean, who uses a Flickr mobile app? Anybody? Oh,
it's horrible.
I was just trying to think. Is there one?
Yeah, there is. There is
okay.
one.
Wow. Okay.
There is one, and it's
so
not
don't
worth
try
it.
To use the website on your mobile.
I remember I used to use some third-party app to post my mobile photos to Flickr. This was before Instagram.
Uh-huh.
And then I remember being very excited when Flickr finally came out with their app. And I just kept forgetting to use it because there was nothing compelling about it.
Yeah.
And, of course, Instagram came along and all these millions of other Instagram-like photo apps. And I've just, like Ayaz, I forget that there is even a Flickr app.
I'm thinking about my contacts. I do have an email to Flickr. It's still in my contacts. So I can do that. I guess what this guy could do, or Khan, or however you say his last name.
Khan!
I think that's how you say it.
That's the way you say it. Thank you, Sarah. If he can, you know, forge relationships with, I guess, Apple or something, so you actually would have a send to Flickr. Instead of send to Twitter or send to Facebook. That's the kind of thing that would help their mobile strategy a lot.
Well, that's what I do on Instagram now. Almost every single picture I post to Instagram, I send to Flickr.
Okay, but if Instagram is owned by Facebook, are they going to keep that going? I would imagine that.
That's a good question.
I'm kind of curious if Yahoo's going to get a little bit more aggressive about being, at least trying to integrate a little better with mm-hmm. operating systems so that people use them as a default. Because, again, if you forget the app exists and you forget your email contact exists, they got to do something to get a presence, you know, known.
Absolutely. I mean, I let my Flickr Pro account expire earlier this year. I have no access to the majority of my collections. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, they're still there. I just can't look at them or anything. I'll just wait till Flickr gets cool again and then I'll start paying. I mean, that's sad.
I think that's a lot of people's attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is a gold mine of opportunity.
Absolutely.
So that's what Marissa Meyer hopefully is thinking is before we totally ruin this, let's get Sarah back rather than get to the point where Sarah goes,
because,
you know, there's never going to be enough money for me to pay to get those.
That's
books.
The thing, right. Sarah, you want to go back when they do something compelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that brand has like our hearts, you know, it's like the underdog now. It's weird.
Just a few short years ago, I would never have thought I would feel this way about Flickr, but it's nice to see that specifically the employees have said, we saw Khan in the Flickr office this week, so things are happening. Let's just hope they happened for, and they are good.
Clear eyes, good Flickr things. Heart, can't lose. Mm-hmm. Physical Google wallet card. When I saw this story this morning, I was at first extraordinarily confused. Then my second reaction was, this is the stupidest thing I may have ever heard. And then when I finished reading the story, my last reaction is, this might be brilliant.
All right. So the Android police had they got a tip that there's going to be a physical Google Wallet credit card. The news comes from screenshots from the new Google Wallet app. So this is a leak. It's not official yet. And it kind of works like Google Voice. So you'd have a card, a physical card, that works like a regular credit card, and it's linked to other cards you already have. Now, obviously, the Wallet app kind of does this already. So in theory, you could leave all your cards at home and just carry the Wallet card, and it'll be able to be swiped at like anywhere that credit cards are taken. And to manage payments, if you want to switch what card's being charged, you take your phone out, you go to Wallet, you tell, you basically are going to relink it to a different account, and then you swipe your card. The card can be ordered from the app itself, according to the screenshots. There's more Wallet features coming, Wallet Balance, so you can deposit and withdraw money from there, so it becomes like a bank account. Person-to-person transfers, and even transit cards, if you want to tap your wallet to do that.
That's awesome.
I'm kind of curious, you know, do you guys think this is like this physical card, is it a gateway to getting people to use Google Wallet like for everything? Because, I mean, it's kind of languishing, but if you had this ability to use it, people know that plastic.
Well, it's brilliant because we already, like you said, we do have that kind of tangible association already that this means money. And, you know, I mean, that's my version of Google Wallet, just strap them to the back of your phone. If they can...
Does it demagnetize your card?
I stagger them back and forth, the magnetic strip. I haven't had a problem in over a year with that. But what's funny is I do have the NFC and the Google Wallet in here regardless, but, you know, I use this. and I think a lot of that is like... I think what is really going to make this work for Google and why Wallet hasn't taken off so much is just because of the fragmentation, the different carriers that have different restrictions on it. It's like, oh, you got the Verizon version, so you're not going to get the Google Wallet. And it's like, remember before Froyo, or was it Froyo, was the one that that decoupled the applications from the Android operating system so they could actually be updated independent of the carrier rolling out new versions of the OS. So I think it was Froyo and beyond, like, oh, well, I guess that's the version of Google Maps and Gmail you've got. And now, you know, it's like, hey, we rolled out a new version. It's like, you may still be on Gingerbread. It's totally cool. But here's the latest Gmail and all of those things. So the idea that they can say, okay, so I don't care what phone you've got. Hey, maybe you've even got an iPhone, whatever. You can use Google Wallet. And that's really cool because now it's not associated with any carriers. Especially if like if the card they're talking about is actually NFC, that's even cooler because just strap that to the back of your phone.
The other thing is if it gets stolen, you can cancel that one card. You don't have to even keep your other cards. Like I know a friend of mine, this happened to her. So why not just keep this? This seems like a brilliant idea for the mobile strategy when it comes to payments because everybody's trying to get in on that. Mm-hmm. So how could you possibly get people to understand tap to pay? People don't like tap to pay. They understand their cards. Jason, what do you think about Google doing this?
I think it's sweet. It opens up. Google Wallet has this, as it's been so far, has this kind of the downside of being it almost attaches itself too much to Android, and Google, of course, wants this to apply to everyone. So I think you're right. This opens it up to a larger base, and I think you're dead on in comparing this to something like Google Voice as being just one thing that you load everything into. And sure, it's a little silly when you think about it because Google Wallet with NFC, you know, aims to eliminate the need for something physical or tangible. But that's not always ideal. And this is a great way to bring in other devices that maybe don't have that NFC capability to begin with.
I think the Google Voice analogy is brilliant because the idea that like, it's like a railroad track switching thing and like I decide what phones are going to ring. I decide what cards it's going to – hey, maybe you could split the payment across multiple ones and I don't know.
what if I buy my car?
Sometimes that's a thing where like you're buying something really expensive and maybe you got like a $2,000 limit on each card per thing. You know, we've all if you've ever been there and had to call your bank, it's a real pain. I think – that this might be the thing that's like gets everybody adopting it because it's like, oh, that cool new thing. And it's another card, right, that you already have that association to. And then years a year later or something, people are like, oh, and did you hear? You can do that on your phone now, too.
Use a Google Wallet physical card and swipe it through a Square dongle? That works fine, right?
You can do that. That's
the universe
be able to.
Implodes when you cross the stream, though.
I'm sort of thinking like, okay, if this was just to replace all the credit cards, I mean, I don't have that many credit cards.
That's the big advantage,
yeah,
right?
Four little pieces of plastic become one. Great. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't hinder anything else that I do regularly. Love it.
The trick will be for the general consumer convincing them that this is safe, or that convincing them to kind of understand why they would want to do this, and you know, have that be kind of a safe option.
I think why you want to do it is easy to convince.
Right.
What Sarah just said is all you need to say, and right. people will be into the idea. Do you trust Google exactly. to handle all of your credit card numbers? That will be the
wait a minute. I have to load barrier. Every single credit card I have into this yeah. one database. What happens if that one credit card gets stolen? Does it mean that people have access to every
as soon
single
as you
account
put it on the internet? Suddenly everyone loses their sense of rationality,
right.
And they won't take risks that they take every day with their physical stuff.
You know, another cool thing about this new Google Wallet is Sarah had mentioned, you know, using the Square thing. This actually introduces person to person transfers. So if we're both Google Wallet subscribers, I can.
Then we don't need to use Venmo or PayPal. It's all. Yeah.
I do that with cash Square. Too.
Cash?
Yeah. Oh, like cash is dirty.
Like a paper wallet.
What percentage do they take?
Huh?
Well, what's the transaction fee on that?
You know, as long as you don't rip it in half, nothing.
There you go.
Yeah. Let's finish up with a guest article from Richard Stallman on Wired.com. Wired's running a series of guest experts talking about the patent system. So we're not going to cover every one of these, but if you're interested in that issue, it's a great series to take a look at. Of course, if you don't know who Richard Stallman is, he is the top luminary in open source, in free software. He is the founder of the Free Software Foundation and GNU, and he is the defender that software should be able to run however you want, wherever you want. He is saying that the patent system is not about software, it's about practices. Now, I know one thing that's going to annoy Iaz is he keeps using the word ideas.
That's true. He does.
But he doesn't mean ideas, because you can't patent an idea, right?
That's correct.
He means practices. He means methods and practices when he says that. And he's saying if the practices are executed using software, we refer to them as software patents, though they could be implemented in hardware. You don't actually patent the software. You patent the method and practice that the software is executing. So one horrible example, tell me if I get this wrong. If you slide to unlock in software, that's under the slide to unlock patent. But if you actually built a piece, you know, a mechanism that you touched with your finger and slid and it unlocked your phone, falls under that patent? Theoretically, you could build a piece of hardware that would do that?
Or you had a special integrated circuit that was dedicated to just that one
thing?
Yeah,
exactly. It's a piece of hardware.
But that integrated circuit would run some firmware.
Right.
Well, so semantics.
I mean, the whole thing interacts with the touchscreen. So unless Apple made their own, or whoever made
maybe
their own.
Maybe it's a separate touchscreen.
It could be a little. It could be its own.
I'm not
thing.
Saying it would make sense.
It could be like a double or triple screened device, perhaps. I don't know.
He's positing that substantive changes that are made to patent law will always be worked around because lawyers are smart.
He called them clever. I love that word.
They'll find a way around whatever laws are put in place to try to limit software patents. And he says that a limiting software patents would likely be found unconstitutional in his opinion. So it's probably not likely that we outlaw software patents altogether. He suggests developing, distributing, or running a program on generally used computing hardware should not constitute patent infringement. So in other words, you can patent software all day long, but infringing that patent is not going to be caused by someone distributing software or running code. Specifically, he's after the ability, he's always has been after the ability, to have the freedom to run whatever code you want anywhere. So he's saying, let the software patent system stay the way it is, just don't make it illegal to run code of any kind. And his metaphor is surgery. When a surgeon performs surgery, they are prevented by law. There's a law that was passed specifically from being sued for patent violation, even if the devices and techniques employed in the operation are found to infringe. Patents on surgical techniques and devices are fought outside of the operating theater. That way, if someone needs to save a life, they don't hesitate because they risk patent infringement. They go ahead and they do whatever it needs to take a life. Or to save the life, not to take the life.
Take care of that life.
Thank you. Now, obviously, the stakes are not nearly as high in software, but he's saying let's do a similar thing, which is let's fight the software patent battles outside of the execution of the code. But if I have a generally used computer, not a specific piece of chip like Darren was talking about, but a computer that's used to generally run software, allow me to run whatever what code I want.
So he's saying, and then we'll battle it out in court while it's running, or outside of that? Like, I don't get that.
His point is that we eliminate a lot of these lawsuits and a lot of the pain and agony of cross licensing to do what everyone considers to be simple things like slide to unlock, and it becomes a situation similar to the medical field where they still have patent battles and they still have to do licensing if you want to make devices and sell devices, but you don't have the people running the software getting in trouble for running the software, and it makes it easier for cross licensing to happen, for Fran to happen. That's his argument.
So he's like, let the coders, let the sysadmins do their thing, let the lawyers do their thing.
I was reading this article, and I'm thinking, okay, there definitely should be some kind of exceptions out. I love the idea of actually exempting out classes of things that can't be patentable. That's a great – ideas cannot be patentable. We were talking about that earlier. But the thing about this, it almost feels like – Stallman is from, or at least he's talking about like an older guard, an older world where back when people were doing software development in the beginning, it was a hobbyist thing, right? If you just kind of like, I'm just going to mess around with my computer. Nobody's doing this anywhere else. Why would anybody ever sue me or try to stop me from doing this? Because that's just a hobbyist thing. But it's grown to the point and matured to the point where everybody has a device on them of some kind. That's a computer. And this method can be patented. So it's not the Wild West like it used to be where you can just do anything. It's almost like the idea that I could do a better job with this technique than you could. That's like saying I can go to your property. Oh, you have a nice yard. I'd like to come over and build a Starbucks there. It's like, well, you know what? Maybe the industry has gotten so mature at this point that no software developer out there could possibly think that they are coming up with a novel idea. Like, is there some point where you're like, okay, well, I can't just wander into a park and stake my claim. Reasonably, somebody has this. If there was a mechanical licensing right, kind of like with music, like where you could force and say, look, I'm going to do that, I'm going to pay a fee, and you can't stop me, that could be a great way to get around this. But it just seems like the software has matured so fast that the law is nowhere near keeping up.
Yeah, and that's what this whole series is about, is the idea of what is our solution here when we've gotten in trouble. And Stallman says even if we change the patent law to restrict what can be patented, that doesn't overturn the current patents necessarily, and it could take 20 years for those to work out. And he says that's too long. We need to do something faster than that. All right, let's have a little more fun and talk about patents. No, let's talk about the randomizer.
I was like, do I need the patent wars drop?
Chateauetry is a new iPhone app for $3 that lets you put words in William Shatner's mouth. He has recorded three versions of hundreds of words that you can slide up onto a screen and make William Shatner say things.
So what did you make him say this morning, Tom?
Oh, I muted it earlier because Veronica was text messaging me.
No illusions. A fiery coward. Cheers.
Can you That's say what con? You made him say?
I said, I am a robot and hide no illusions. A fiery coward cheers. It's kind of like magnet poetry.
Uh-huh.
The app, you can resize the letters, right? And that's supposed to make the change the way he says
inflection.
The
inflection.
Right. You have three versions of every word. So here, let me just clear it out. There's lots of annoying sound effects in it, too.
Sounds awesome. I can't wait to download it.
Let's take the word book.
Shut that.
Book.
And then I tap it twice, make it louder.
Book.
Book.
And how many words are in the vocabulary?
I don't know.
Total?
There's a few hundred.
Because you obviously had to do everything three times.
I wanted it to say, this is Tech News Today. It didn't have anything but this and is.
They didn't have today?
No.
Okay,
are there
well.
Add-on libraries or anything? It's like a $3
not yet,
app, right?
No.
Hey, William Shatner fans will download this. $3? I don't know. If it was free, I'd download it too. But I'm not going to recommend it on iPhone.
I don't know about the poetry. If it was like a William Shatner speaking spell.
Yeah, I think everybody wants it to be a cooler thing than they designed it to be. I mean, if you look at it, you can go and pick the words, but the words are kind of in these magnet poetry interface down at the bottom. And so it's kind of meant to like be serendipitous. And then you get to play around with
it. You want to know, does it say con? Either C-O-N or K-H.
If it doesn't say today, I doubt it says con.
There's no K words at all.
Well, C-O-N.
How about C-O-N?
And then just make him be dramatic.
You can say nothing with C-O-N. It goes right from collect to coward. There's not. There's just
collects.
Not a lot of words.
No, it's not as dramatic.
Collects.
Yeah.
But you can't say collects today, and I don't like that
Cheers
either.
Cheers book.
Oh boy!
Get him to advertise the new Cheers book about the history of the show Cheers. Let's move on to the calendar.
Let's Monday on November 5th in San Francisco, GigaOM has their roadmap conference. It's about designing in the age of connectedness. And that's kind of it. I mean, there's stuff happening later in the week, but I'll wait till Monday to start rolling out that stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy week.
Finally, earnings is starting to die down a little bit.
For another 3 months.
Earnings, yeah. Get ready. More earnings coming up.
The earnings burnings. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
I love getting the video mails, and we got one from Scott who did it right. He uploaded his video to YouTube and sent us the link. He is in a car, but he assured us in his email that he was pulled over to the side. The car was off. He was just in there because it's quiet. And I think he's right. But he's got a good point about Windows naming conventions.
Hey, TNT crew. This is Scott, the designer from Chicago. I wanted to comment on your story about the Windows 8 store apps and style. First, I agree with you that they need more apps in the store, but I think you're undervaluing the marketing issue about how to name it. You need to be able to create buzz that developers can talk about easily. Lucky for Microsoft, I've come up with a solution. You call it Windows Tile. It's a name we've been using since Windows Phone 7 came out that Microsoft themselves called them Live Tiles, and it makes perfect sense for what they're doing now. Thanks and love.
Oh, Windows Tile Store?
I like it.
Sounds like I'm doing home renovations.
No, you're going to have to go to Kitchen in Hell for that.
That's true.
Windows and tiles go together. Home improvement, right? You have windows. You got tiles. Mm. Why not?
That's true. Really, you are building your digital home.
It's like Bob.
That you just pulled that out of my head. That's so weird.
Sorry about
that. That's all right. They could name it to Windows Bob.
Everything is like Bob, actually. It all sort of goes back to that.
This is something to do with the red and blue pill?
And Melinda Gates.
There we go.
Took the red and blue pill.
Let's check the emails.
We got a couple emails about the Nexus 4 because I think it was like announced while we were doing the show, so we didn't have like a lot of the details on it. Email from Bill. He's saying there was hardly a peep about it not having LTE. So here's a big peep. How can the Google flagship phone not have LTE at this juncture? What do you suppose they were thinking or not thinking? I have no idea.
I think we knew it was not going to have an LTE, and I thought we had mentioned it, but maybe we were remiss in mentioning it.
I swear I mentioned it. Maybe
we just didn't make a big deal out of it, and that's because it's a mid-range phone.
People made a big deal about the original iPhone not having 3G.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of crazy to think.
The ability to move the phone either way, because LTE, you'd have to have a lot more radios in that thing. Versus being able to go HSPA Plus from T-Mobile to AT&T, at least.
It's crazy. This has got LTE, and it's a Sprint phone. They don't even have LTE yet. Yeah.
It's capable, though.
There we go.
It's forward thinking. Got another email from Steven. Says, hey, I love the show. I wanted to talk about Wi-Fi sharing in times of emergencies. I live in NYC. We're on the East Coast. Up to 8 million people still don't have power. Anybody who's watching the show in the affected area, please consider sharing your Wi-Fi to allow your neighbors to get access to information to find out about transit, food resources, safe drinking water information, or just to tell people that they're okay. Wanted to open up this issue to a wider discussion, as proposed laws would require you to lock your internet access and could cause major problems in times like these. An allowance for unlocking during emergencies might not be sufficient because thousands of homes are abandoned. People aren't necessarily sophisticated enough to properly manage these issues during these trying times. So anybody who hears this and knows how, please consider passing the word along. Information can save lives, and many people are at risk now.
To that note, if you're interested in doing such a thing, I suggest that you head over to openwireless.org. It's actually supported by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and it has step-by-step guide on how you can set up a segmented public version of your private network. Name it openwireless.org. They take care of all the EULA stuff for you and all of that.
So it's great. Definitely agree with the emailer. Encourage you to do this, and definitely agree with Darren. Encourage you to do it safely. And openwireless.org, perfect way to find out how to do that. I also encourage you to go into our subreddit and just look around. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. It's the place where folks suggest stories for us to cover on the show and get to vote on whether they think those stories should be covered or not. Technewstoday.reddit.com. Go check it out. Also, if you particularly like some part of the show, maybe Sarah makes an insightful comment or Iaz cracks a particularly hilarious joke.
Never happens.
Or I just look stupid. Any of those parts can be sent to twit.tv/bestof, and it helps us put together our best of shows at the end of the year. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Darren Kitchen, as always, a pleasure having you on.
Absolutely.
What's happening at the Hack 5?
We've got an awesome episode. I'm back from TorCon San Diego, and I got the awesome opportunity to talk to Dan Tentler about his tool Eagle Eye, which allows you to wade through like 50,000 links at once of like potentially interesting things, as well as Senor Jiffy Pop talked to me about, get this, war dialing. You heard me right.
Good old-fashioned war dialing?
Oh, there's some amazing stuff out there still.
All
so,
right.
So tune in, HAK5.org.
How Matthew Broderick.
I know, right?
That's awesome.
He's doing it over VoIP. It's cool.
That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. Email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. Or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. 260-TNT-SHOW is our Google voice number. Sasha Segan joins us on Monday. We'll see you then.